Hi, this is Javon, your Blinds.com design consultant.
Oh, wow, a real person.
Yep, I'm here to help with everything from selecting the perfect window treatments to...
Well, I've got a complicated project.
No problem. We make the complex simple. I can even help schedule a professional measure and install.
I didn't realize you did that.
We can also send you samples fast and free.
Wow, I mean, I always thought I needed a designer to come to my home, but scheduling's always a nightmare.
Not with Blinds.com. We're on your schedule, and there's no haggling, pressure, or hidden fees either.
I just might have to do more.
Whatever you need. How about you tell me what you had in mind?
Okay, then. So the first room we're looking at is for guests coming over, and I'm thinking of something.
Blinds.com has covered over 25 million windows, all backed by a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 40% site-wide. Rules and restrictions may apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Let's do this Chris Herndon deal.
Sometimes historic events suck. But what shouldn't suck is learning about history. I do that through storytelling. History That Doesn't Suck is a chart-topping history podcast created by me, Professor Greg Jackson. Listen to History That Doesn't Suck on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Hannon joins me now. Chris, what are you listening to?
That's Rock and Roll Never Forgets by Bob Seger from his classic 1976 album Night Moves. Bob Seger, 80 years old today.
So you got a big game tonight in the Twin Cities. I don't imagine when the playoffs started, we thought the T-Wolves would be hosting a game in the semifinals, but here we are.
I actually predicted that very thing. I predicted the Wolves to beat the Lakers and the Warriors to beat the Rockets. So, yeah.
And so here we are. I know you're big on judging the mood of a city, Chris. Anyway, we'll talk about that series when it comes up. I don't think anyone would have predicted that we had three 60-win teams this year and all three would be 0-1 after their first playoff game. Let's go through them in order. Let's start with the one that we didn't talk about yesterday, which was Cleveland losing to the Pacers. Obviously, no Darius Garland. How big a shock was that? And what do you make of the Pacers' chances?
It was a surprise, I guess. I mean, Cleveland had been so dominant in the first round, even without Garland against Miami. But, like, you know, when you're missing an all-star guard, that's kind of a lot to miss.
Right.
And Indiana is really good. And I think Indiana's, you know, been really good all season, pretty much. And I think that team's totally legit. And so, like, a surprise, not a shock. And so, like, we'll see, you know, if Garland can get back, if he can sort of be himself. But if not, then I think the Pacers can make that a series. I'd still favor the Cavs to win it, I think. But, like, I mean, you know, that's a real team in Indiana.
All right. It is interesting. I mean, they're going to have Miles Turner's free agent, I think, after this year. So, and they have some salary issues coming. But I was thinking about it. We always think about the Grizzlies. You know, we talk about the Grizzlies core three or whatever. And I'd ask you, who's better, Ja, Jaren, and Dez, or Halliburton, Siakam, and Nembhard?
You know, I mean, it's sort of a, you know, I would lean the Grizzlies slightly on that if everyone's sort of healthy. I don't know if Nimhard is the number three there. Maybe he is.
Maybe he's not. That's exactly right. Maybe he's not. Maybe Miguel's beside Niles Turner might be number three.
But I think it's a close call. I think that, you know, I think right now Halliburton is sort of moved ahead of Ja, but that could change, you know, instantly if Ja is healthy and Ja is the best version of himself. I think, you know, Siakam and Jaren are different kind of players, but at similar levels in terms of being sort of, you know, all-star, borderline, all-NBA power forwards. Siakam has made a couple of all-NBA teams, but it's the kind of sort of like Julius Randle making all-NBA teams. You know, Jaren, you know, is going to be on the fringes of it this year, whether he makes it or not. And then, you know, whether it's Miles Turner or Andrew Nimhard, you know, they're sort of like Bane in that, like, non-All-Stars, but, like, high-level starters who haven't made All-Star teams. So I think it's debatable, but I think the difference, hey, conference is the difference. I mean, it's not that big of a difference in the number of games they won this year. And so conference is the difference, and I think, you know, general health and supporting cast and some of that, right?
I guess some of it is what I mean is I think of Indiana as a mediocre plus team, right? They can be entertaining, but there's a hard ceiling on how good they are, right? And so then when I think about their best players and the Grizzlies' best players and that they're roughly equivalent, I wonder what that tells me about the Grizzlies.
They won 50 games. They finished fourth in the East in the second round of the playoffs. So, yeah, there's a hard ceiling. They're not a super team that's going to march to a title. I just don't know why we obsess about that all the time instead of just, like, you know,
enjoying the fact that they're
enjoying having good basketball teams, you know?
Yeah, no, 100%. Okay, so we had that one. Cleveland goes down. Kenny Atkinson, by the way, wins Coach of the Year. Does that seem like the right choice to you?
I mean, I think it was pretty obvious he was going to win. I mean, there's never one guy who has to be Coach of the Year. There's always lots of guys who do good coaching jobs, this year in particular, but given that Cleveland, like, zoomed up to the top without significant changes to roster. No, I think a big thing that happened there was they were healthier. They were, you know, Darius Garland missed a lot of time last year. So I think they got healthier, and that was a big thing. But you did feel the fingerprints of coaching on sort of transforming that offense and making that offense elite in a way that it hadn't been before with essentially the same kind of talent. So, yeah, I think Atkinson was certainly a deserving winner there, and not at all a surprising one.
All right, we move on to Knicks Celtics. Celtics make 15 of 60 from three, just 15 of 60 from three, and end up losing as the Knicks make 17, shoot 46% by contrast. Knicks win 108 to 105. Your thoughts on that tilt?
Well, I think one of the things that people have talked about with the Celtics this year is they're so three-point shooting reliant, and they're really good at it. And so they can really run teams off the floor when the shots are falling. But, I've certainly read and heard people make the point during the season, like, you know, that could make them susceptible in a playoff game if the shots aren't falling. If you're so reliant on that and you have a bad shooting night, and they had a really bad shooting night against the Knicks, then, you know, then that becomes a problem. Like, are they going to miss 45 threes again in the series? And so if you miss 45 three-point attempts, like, there's a good chance you're going to lose that basketball game.
Right.
And so we'll see. I mean, the Knicks, I think, got swept by the Celtics in the regular season. I think that's right.
Yep.
But they also built that team in part to match up defensively with Boston in terms of, you know, playing the one big and having good, you know, good defenders on the wing and having, in terms of having, you know, OG Anunoby and Mikal Bridges and Josh Hart. Like, they have the bodies to match up on the perimeter with the Celtics defensively. And so it didn't work in the regular season, but, like, the playoffs are different, and so maybe it will.
Yeah, it's funny. It feels like, okay, yes, they can certainly lose a game if they miss 45 threes. Are they going to lose four? But they actually had a stretch during the regular season where they missed a whole bunch of threes for a whole bunch of games. Like, they had a low.
Right.
They had a it isn't just a bad night. They had a bad stretch in there because they did miss a whole bunch of threes. And the other thing that was striking was they weren't all good threes. Like, Jason Tatum, particularly at the end, took a couple of really tough threes that didn't seem like he needed to. Anyway, it was interesting to see that unfold. Let's go to the next one, Denver and Oklahoma City. On 2 days rest, Denver wins that one. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was trying to watch that game in the second half, and OKC was up 10, and it's the fourth quarter, and I can't keep my eyes open, so I went to sleep, and there we go. excuse me. I mean, one of the questions people had about OKC, as dominant as they've been in the regular season, was, you know, their offense at the highest levels of playoff basketball, and particularly, like, the secondary guys there, you know, the Jalen Williams, Chet Holmgren. Are they going to be able to carry a lot of offensive load as you go deep in the playoffs at this point? And the answer was sort of no last night. And Jalen Williams, I think, was like 5 of 20, and Chet Holmgren did not had a huge game against the Grizzlies to polish the Grizzlies off, but not so much last night. And Shea, other than game 4 against the Grizzlies, has not been awesome. Like, he wasn't awesome against the Grizzlies other than game 4. And it feels like they need him to be awesome. You know, they can't just rely. As you get deeper and deeper, like, now for stretches against the Grizzlies, they could rely on this. But to rely on just turning teams over and running the other way, I mean, as you get deeper and deeper, that may be harder to pull off on a consistent basis. And so they need, you know, Shea to be awesome or Williams Holmgren to be good in terms of scoring and half-court offense. And so, yeah, I mean, that Denver team is not dissimilar from the team that won a title a few years ago. That team didn't have any depth either. It was a six-man team, and all six guys stayed healthy all through four rounds of the playoffs. And Russell Westbrook, I think, this season has pretty much replaced the role that Bruce Brown had on that title team a couple years ago. And Christian Brown is not as good of a defensive player as Kentavious Caldwell Pope was in the same role a few years ago, but he's probably a little bit better offensive player, maybe. And so the question for Denver is, like, A, can all six stay healthy, and then B, can Jamal Murray, you know, be what he was then?
Right.
And that is pretty up and down now. Like, it's not like he is in spurts, but he was, like, consistently great when they won a title, and, like, you know, I don't know if you're going to get that, but the general framework of that team is not dissimilar from a team that has already won a title.
Shea was good last night, 33-10, 8 assists, 1 turnover in 40 minutes. He was good last night. But Jokic was unbelievable. 42-22-6, just incredible, as he was in foul trouble. Where do you put Jokic? You know, the greats of the game conversation. Where do you put ever? Where vaguely do you how do you think about Jokic?
The problem with that is that you've got a handful of guys who have sort of legitimately entered the conversation, like him and Curry particularly.
Right.
And I think a step back from those two. I think Jokic is already maybe past Durant in a historical setting, but I think Jokic and Curry at the front of the list with LeBron, who's been there a long time at this point in terms of active players, but Jokic and Curry sort of have really entered the conversation, and like Durant and Giannis are sort of hovering around there too. And at some point when you have in your head the idea of top 10 players, and suddenly you're adding, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5 more guys to that list, you can't think of it in that small of a number anymore. And so I think when you've won, I don't know, what is it, 3, 4 MVPs, something like that. I think 3, maybe he's won. 3 MVPs and a title. Like that, I don't know. I don't know off the top of my head the number of guys who have done that, but it's a small number. And so, like, I think he's in top 20 territory. I just see it, but I can't flippantly say top 10 because that's a real small number, you know?
Right. Like, how do you...
But think of similar players. I think Jokic historically is probably... You put ahead of Barkley. You put ahead of Dirk.
But where do you put him with Hakeem and Tim Duncan?
No, I just can't. I feel like you got to be retired for 3 years for me to start doing that, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I don't...
There's so damn many of them now because you have the perennials too. You got Wilt and Kareem and Bill Russell.
You're talking about Diggs. You got Shaq, right? I think he's ahead. I think he has moved ahead historically, I would say, of the David Robinson, Patrick Ewing, even Moses Malone class of guys.
Yeah.
And has put himself in the conversation with the Shaquille O'Neal, Hakeem Olajuwon group. I think Duncan is still, to me, like maybe a half step above that, but maybe not.
And then you got Jabbar and Wilt.
And Bill Russell, right.
And Bill Russell.
And so, to even be in the conversation is pretty heady stuff.
Yeah, it's crazy. By the way, one little thing. I was irked when we were talking about – in the end, I came down on I think the Grizzlies were better off winning that game. Never advocated that they tank the game, never or anything like it. But the question, would they have been better off? And I think it's a reasonable question. Would they have been better off? Would the franchise have been better off at this point had they gone and lost to Dallas? Because there was nothing good that came out of that Oklahoma City series, and now they don't have their pick. But in the context of that conversation, you weren't, but a lot of people were like, first-round picks are meaningless anyway. Christian Brown, 21st pick in the draft. That doesn't mean you're going to get Christian Brown, but you very well could. And he's a useful player. When you're trying to spend, when you've got big money you're spending on certain players, it's good to pick up Christian Browns. And so I just think, whatever. There's a lot of people in this draft. In that series, Jeffrey pointed out earlier, Shea was the 11th pick, Jeffrey. Again, you're not likely going to get him. And where was Jokic? Second round somewhere.
Anyway. 41.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you... Of these series that are now the three series that are now one zip with the road team, rank them in terms of most likely for the road team to go ahead and win four.
Well, I think the home road thing is meaningless with Minnesota. I mean, the seeding stuff is meaningless with Minnesota.
The three that are already done that are in, where you got the Knicks, Denver, and Indiana up one zip. Where is there most likely to be an? Where are most and least likely to see an upset from those three series?
Man, that's a tough call. I mean, I wonder, I wonder if it's not the Knicks, just because
the most likely.
I don't know. I mean, I don't really have a conviction on this. I know I'm supposed to, but I don't know.
No, you're not supposed to. I think it's interesting you don't. I would have assumed that Celtics are going to win that. They're not going to miss 45 free throws again, and that's the one I would say that Celtics are going to win. The other two, I could see it. I still think. I think the 60 win teams are going to win all three series, but. You know.
Yeah, I don't know. I think they're very similar in that regard. I guess the Pacers, as much as I've defended the Pacers as being a good team, I guess I don't know if I feel the upside of the Pacers in a vacuum is as high as the upside of the Knicks and Nuggets.
But there we got the injury. We've got the Cleveland injury, though.
Yeah, we have that, and so there is that part of it. I mean, Porzingis missed time, but that was with an illness, so it sounds like he'll be back, but he's not the most reliable guy anyway. I mean, you would sort of like to say Nuggets over Thunder. I mean, Thunder were the one seed last year. They lost in the second round. And, again, this is a Nuggets team that has won a title with this core of players. It's just that Oklahoma City was so overwhelming across the regular season. It's just hard to lose faith in them this quickly, even with a loss in game one.
Warriors
a two-point loss in game one, by the way.
Warriors, T-Wolves tonight. What do you think of that matchup?
You know, if that were a first-round series, I would pick the Warriors. I think, you know, going into the playoffs, I had sort of recalibrated how good I thought the teams were, setting aside their record and all that, and I had the Warriors, you know, higher than the Wolves, and also you factor in, you know, the been there, done that of those guys and finding ways to win. I just wonder about the sort of accumulation of stuff with Golden State. You know, Butler had the injury in the first round series. It hasn't been peak Jimmy Butler. Curry's got the thumb thing that seems to be lingering. And then Draymond Green is like, you know, he's really on the precipice of of missing a game with a suspension with the way he's racking up the flagrants and the techs. And I think that Warriors team has a high upside with all three of those guys on the floor and all three of those guys, you know, in top form. But I think it changes in a hurry when you take any of that out of the equation. And Butler not being 100% and Green potentially not being on the floor, I think that stuff can sap Golden State fast. And I think Minnesota, not only do they have the home court, do they have more rest, they're just a more stable team in terms of, like, you know, knowing, sort of having more reliance on who's going to be playing and how healthy they're going to be. They're just a little bit more reliable, I think. So I think I like the Wolves in that series.
And then finally, since we never talked about Greg Popovich and his decision to not return as head coach, I know you were a big Duncan guy, and so you watched a lot of Spurs over the years. Thoughts on Pop retiring or moving into president of basketball operations?
I sort of assumed, you know, when he had had, was it a stroke he had earlier this year?
Yeah. Minor stroke.
Yeah, I mean, that was my assumption that he would not be coaching next season. I mean, it seemed like even before that, it was sort of getting to be time, you know? And so that was sort of my assumption that this would be what was happening. I didn't think that assistant would get the job. I mean, that's a job like everyone in the world wants, pretty much. And I'm sort of surprised I put it in that guy's hands. But, you know, they know more about him than I do. I mean, Pop's one of the all-time great coaches and one of the all-time great sort of non-player figures probably in the league, you know? He's not as showy in his own way as like Red Auerbach and Pat Riley, but he's kind of in that vein in terms of, you know, winning and in terms of exerting influence over the league and in terms of just being sort of a big figure who looms over a lot of stuff in basketball. I think those are probably the best comps for him.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Chris Harrington from the Daily Memphian. If you are looking for a new financial institution, Leaders Credit Union would be the place to look. I can say that because we've done it ourselves here in the Calkins family. Leaders is a credit union. And what that means is, I'll be honest, I didn't know what it means. We used to have a credit union that was literally in the CA building. We had a credit union there. And I'm like, what exactly is a credit union? And the truth is, it does everything a bank does. All your financial transactions, checking account, whatever, ATM, loan, all the stuff. It's just instead of having stockholders and a corporate structure, all the money is plowed back into the credit union and for the benefit of its members. You're a member, you're not a customer. And so you're going to get incredible technology, incredible service, great rates, on whatever you choose to do there, Leaders Credit Union, and whatever. People are like, I want a big bank because I want a lot of ATMs. Well, I got access to 85,000 ATMs across the country, fee-free ATMs. They got a branch in Bartlett. They have a brand new, beautiful branch in Arlington, but you don't need to do that. You can just download the app. Go to leaderscu.com/ESPN. All right, Fish on Friday on Tuesday coming up next. Our man in Washington, D.C. has promised a tariff-free Fish on Friday on Tuesday. We'll do that next. Jeff Calkins Show, 92.9 FM ESPN. All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by our man in Washington, D.C. It's Charles Fishman, author of 3 New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon, also a 3-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for excellence in business writing, and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand joins me now. We never did, Charles, get to the long ago when it was English Muffin Day, and Jeffrey and I were both extolling the virtues of English muffins. And not only that, a guy who has a band out there sent me the song that he'd written, a tribute to English muffins. You, weirdly enough, came in later on in the day, texted me or told me that you oppose my position on English muffins. So let's clear that up before we get to anything else.
I was so surprised at your enthusiasm for English muffins. I really was. I just want to say to the listeners, something may happen here and I may have to bail quickly.
Okay.
We're expecting a call that we can't reschedule, that we didn't pick the moment. And if the call comes through, I'm going to...
We're gone. So every moment will be exciting.
This is really exciting.
This is so exciting.
And I'm glad we're devoting time to English muffins. I eat bagels almost every day. Not quite as often as cookies. People who listen know how I have cookies every day. But almost every day there's a bagel in my life. And you know, an English muffin just looks like a bagel that didn't get the proper nutrition growing up.
I prefer a bagel to an English muffin, but for various things. So, for example, just yesterday, I had a cheeseburger on an English muffin. I have tuna fish sandwiches on English muffins. English muffins much better for that purpose than a bagel, which is heavier, honestly, more filling, and sometimes you want something a little lighter.
Why would you have a hamburger on an English muffin rather than a hamburger bun?
Because it's freaking delicious. So it's much more delicious than a hamburger bun. Much more delicious.
You think it's better than a hamburger
bun. Much more delicious.
Yeah. What's interesting is that in our city here in Washington, D.C., the capital, the great capital of the United States, and let's be honest, the capital of the whole world, the English muffins are often buy one, get one free, which kind of diminishes their credibility.
I would think you'd like them even more. You're a man who likes your value.
There are members of my family. My father loved English muffins. I think my mother loves an English muffin.
You're surrounded. You're surrounded. You're wrong.
I'm surrounded, but I don't do it.
Okay,
we wanted to take note that there is something happening right now that is completely unprecedented.
Okay.
Somebody who's a listener named John.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Claims to be filleting fish.
That's true.
During Fish on Friday.
That's
on Tuesday.
True. Not only that, he sent us a photo of the fish that he is filleting on Fish on Friday on Tuesday.
And let's be honest, the person who's normally filleted on Fish on Friday on Tuesday.
It's me.
Or I was going to say is me. You don't actually let me. You're in control. So I don't get to fillet you.
I wrestle
for
control.
Fillet me.
It's a lot like the tilt between a man and a fish. Only I feel like the fish.
I'm glad that on this particular segment, actual fish are the things being
crappie. He caught crappie. He caught crappie, and he sent us a photo of the crappie.
Is it crappie or crappie?
No, it's called crappie. You're a Yankee, man. It's crappie.
Is it spelled crappie?
It's spelled crappie, but it's pronounced crappie.
Okay.
Yep, 100%.
Okay, there you go. You learn. Look at that. I am always open to learning, even from you.
You said 3 seconds of economic news. What do we got?
The Federal Reserve is meeting today and tomorrow, mm-hmm. And they could raise interest rates or lower interest rates.
That's exciting.
You raise interest rates again to slow inflation. Inflation is cooling at this point. They've done a lot of raising. It's cooling. The economy, we just had this great jobs report last week. The economy is chugging along at the moment. I think we're chugging toward a waterfall. We're going to go over the edge. I think, but there's no reason to cut interest rates. So that's about to happen. I think Donald Trump will be very angry if they don't cut interest rates. No one thinks they're going to cut interest rates tomorrow. There's no reason to.
Okay.
Apple reported earnings last week. Two things were interesting in that call, and I always listen. Actually, three things. Again, they report that half the people buying iPads and half the people buying Apple Watches, now this is worldwide, are brand new to the product. It's astonishing to me in 2025 that half the people who purchase an iPad have never had one before. Half the people purchase a watch have never had one before. Everywhere I go, people are wearing.
I have an Apple Watch.
You have an Apple Watch. My wife has an Apple Watch. I was at an event last night sitting next to a woman who was over 80. She had an Apple Watch. That was point one. Point two is Tim Cook, otherwise known as Tim Apple, said there was no pull through. They did not see in January, February, March, they did not see people buying iPhones or Apple products sooner to get ahead of tariffs.
Because there were anecdotal reports of people doing it, right?
There were anecdotal reports, but like Walmart, Apple is looking at the data worldwide, country by country, state by state, every hour. They would know. And they won't be lying. And the final thing that was interesting about that call was that Tim Cook was in a bad mood. Mm. Tim Cook is a famously even-tempered and good-humored guy. I said to you, he's as good-humored as you. I think in public, he's even more good-humored than you. I can aggravate you.
I just sound particularly peevish on this segment.
Peevish.
But otherwise,
you are otherwise in a good mood, but I can make you sound peevish. It's hard to make Tim Cook sound peevish, and it's not clear why he sounded peevish, but even on Twitter, other people said, boy, Tim Cook is acting like he just can't wait to be done with this thing. So you don't want the CEO of the most valuable company in the world to be in a cranky mood. That's kind of a bad sign. Anyway, that's it for economic news.
No, Marriott earnings. You were going to tell me Marriott earnings.
Yes. Yeah, no. Marriott, the interesting thing about Marriott, that was this morning, they did well, and they predicted no change in their predictions for their business for the rest of the year. They said there will be a softening in the U.S. and Canada. They are predicting from what they had originally predicted, but they think the rest of the world may tick up. And so Ford, GM, Lots of companies have said, we can't tell you what's going to happen the rest of the year. We're, with, quote unquote, withdrawing our guidance. That did not happen with Marriott. So that was interesting because they are, like Walmart, like a lot of other companies, they're very sensitive. You could say, you know what, I'm not going to take the vacation. I'm going
right.
to stay home. So that was interesting. Sorry about that. Yeah.
So one of the things.
That's why the list comes in handy because I forget what I myself want to say.
Jeffrey and I discussed how fitting it was that two Presbyterians and a Jew would be talking about the papal conclave and informing people about the papal conclave. But that's what we're going to do now. What can you tell us about the papal conclave?
Is just so, it's so rich. It's so rich a story. First of all, do you know what conclave means, what the word means?
No, I know concave.
We all know what conclave means in English and what it means and what concave means, which is irrelevant. Conclave in Latin means locked in a building.
Really?
That's what it means. So there you go. The original escape room. If you don't get the right answer, you don't get out. The meeting to choose a new pope starts tomorrow morning, Wednesday morning, Rome time. They're 6 hours ahead, I believe, either 5 or 6 hours ahead right now. And so when we wake up tomorrow morning, they will already be meeting. They, of course, start with a mass. That's what you would expect. And you can't. There are 250 cardinals. They're all in Rome. But you can't vote. The rules say you can't vote if you're 80 or over.
Right.
Only 133 of the 250 are under 80. That means 100, literally 117 of them are over 80.
Are the rest of them just hanging out there? Are they still? Can they still go? They just can't vote?
No. They don't even get to go inside. No. They've been hanging out. They went to the funeral. They've been doing cardinal stuff, whatever that is. And they apparently eat a lot at Rome restaurants. We'll get to that in a minute. The 133 who go in are everything is taken away from them. They are required to focus only on the question at hand, who will be the next pope. No phones of any kind, including smartphones, no tablets, no newspapers, no watches, no reading material from the outside of any kind. They build a wooden floor in the Sistine Chapel under which they put jamming equipment so that no one can try and listen to what's happening using equipment from the outside. Everybody in the conclave is sworn to secrecy. The popes, but also two physicians are there because these people are old.
Right.
The food staff all sworn to secrecy for life. For life. You're never allowed to reveal what happened in this meeting. There's a lot of rules. There's a lot of interesting situations, but they have to stay in there till they pick a pope.
Right.
Now, that's always been the rule going back 1,000 years. Take a guess at what the longest papal conclave was.
Jeffrey,
really a great
Jeffrey,
story.
What do you think the longest papal conclave?
You might know.
Was?
You're asking Mr. Trump.
No.
I'm going to say 4 months.
Oh, I was going to say 5 years.
Oh. Okay. He's saying 5 years. Saying 4 months.
You think we went 5 years without a pope?
Well, I mean, there was such a
At one point, the popes were being killed off left and right.
Well, and it became like a, you know, it was more than, like, it was a political position. Like, you had popes that were essentially.
Maybe,
like,
but they couldn't have been in the room for 5 years, though. Maybe that, yeah. You know, I'm saying
was,
4 months.
There was, in fact, a conclave that lasted 3 years, 2 years and 10 months from November 1268 to September 1271. It was one of the rare ones that wasn't held in Rome. It was held in a little city north of Rome called Viterbo. And this is where all the rules come from. The people of Viterbo.
So they didn't, in fact, make them stay in the room back then.
Got so disgusted that they, yes, 2 years in, they made them stay in the room. And then when they still didn't come to a conclusion, they reduced their rations to bread and water. there's a symbolism to that. At one point, they were limited to a single meal. They've lifted those rules. And then they ripped the roof off the building to try and get them to come up
There were only
about 20 cardinals in those days, but they really got disgusted with them. That was the election of Pope Gregory the Tenth. Mm. Goodness gracious, there was a Pope Gregory the Tenth in 1268.
That's a lot of Gregories already.
And there had been nine previous. He's the one who put in place all these rules. You can't leave. He put in place the one meal a day rule. He put in place no contact with the outside to try and prevent what had happened to him from happening again. The last two popes have been selected in 2 days.
Really?
And it's funny because I have this sense from my childhood of this being a big thing that goes on and on. In the last 130 years, there have only been two conclaves that lasted even 5 days, and that was 1903 and 1922. Here's what happens. On Wednesday, they vote once in the afternoon.
Yeah.
Half the cardinals have never met each other. So they've spent the last week going to meals at great restaurants in Rome, getting to know each other a little bit, but they really don't know what that dynamic is going to be like in the room, 133. You need two-thirds to win. One vote on Wednesday in the afternoon, and then that means you got to have 89 yes votes. And then Thursday and Friday, two votes in the morning and two votes in the afternoon. So they have discussions, people give talks, but then by the end of the day, Friday, you've had five votes. If there is if nobody has 89 votes by the end of the day, Friday, they take the fourth day off, and they reflect.
They can't leave. They stay there. They have to stay in the place.
They don't leave until they rip the roof off.
But they just get to hang out and watch ESPN.
But that's why people think it won't even go 3 days, because on that fourth day, you have to postpone all the voting. So if you come to the end of the day Friday, you're going to be there till Sunday. So that's interesting. There have been a total of 266 popes. What percent of those do you think have been from Italy?
I bet of the 266 popes, I bet half of them have been from Italy.
216. Wow. 80% have been from Italy. One of the two leading candidates, Pietro Parolin, is Italian. This year, he's described by the New York Times as quiet and plodding. He's the leading candidate, and they describe him as plodding.
You know what it is? Quiet, it's just like when you have one kind of, it's just like coaches. If you got a player's coach, the next one has to be a disciplinarian and whatever else.
Right.
And the last coach was, the last coach slash
charismatic,
was charismatic.
Right.
And so now you want quiet and plodding. Do you have any
the
more?
The other leading candidate is a guy named Luis Cagle, C-A-G-L-E, who's Philippine.
Yeah,
he would be the first Asian. There's never been an American pope, and there are going to be some people who are angry to hear this. I said it was tariff-free, not Trump-free. Donald Trump, despite his Twitter feed, his ex feed,
said he had nothing to do with it.
He cannot be the pope because it's the White House Twitter feed and his personal Twitter.
Yeah, he had nothing to do with it, though.
He has nothing to do with it. There's news there.
Nothing to do with it.
Because you must be a bishop to be elected pope. And as far as I know, he's not a bishop. Anyway, there you go. By the time Fish on Friday on Tuesday meets again,
we will have,
a new pope.
Okay, other news, Charles, before we let you go, you had something about Skype? That used to
be
a thing.
Did you ever use Skype?
Skype was like before Zoom, right? Wasn't Skype was kind of Zoom
before
Zoom?
Everything. Skype was before Zoom. Skype was before FaceTime. Skype was the original method for calling internationally without paying. Literally 22 years old, you could make a call using your phone or using your computer, email address to email.
Yeah, I did. I used it from the Olympics. When I'd be at the Olympics, I'd use Skype. That's
VOIP, Voice Over Internet Protocol, Voice Over the Internet.
And what happened to Skype?
They closed it yesterday. Dead. Gone. Outmaneuvered by Zoom and then by Teams. It was owned by
Who's winning that,
Microsoft.
By the way? Teams or Zoom?
I'll tell you, I don't know who's actually winning, but in terms of what's happening month to month, people are using Teams because companies already pay for their Microsoft package.
Teams is
free. So that's kind of sad. It was called Skype because internally when they were developing it, they called it Sky peer-to-peer. sky.
Do you want to go with the Soviet spacecraft or the Fuji mountain climber here? I don't know if we have time for both.
Well, we got to go with the Soviet spacecraft. We did get a great tip on a great story from a listener. We'll get to it next week. It'll hold. This incredible Soviet spacecraft launched in 1972, Cosmos 482, was headed for Venus to help us. Venus is a crazy place. The surface temperature, 780 degrees, hot enough to melt lead. Was headed for Venus, and the timer, a little clock, a little timer on the spacecraft malfunctioned, and the engine shut down, and instead of going to Venus, it stayed in Earth orbit. It has been in Earth orbit since 1972, since you and I were 11. And at one point, it orbited as far away as 6,000 miles from Earth. It is going to crash back to Earth, like Skylab. And normally, space debris wouldn't be news, but it has a shield. It has a shell to protect it
from Venus.
Crashing through.
Oh.
Exactly. Exactly. So it is expected to land. It'll be intact right up to the moment that it hits either the water or the ground. It'll be going 155 miles an hour when it hits. 71% of Earth is water, so they expect it to land in water.
Does it seem likely it's going to hit an I-240 here in Memphis? Because there's a lot of
absolutely no way of knowing before it starts to really re-enter where it's going to land, because it's going 17,000 miles an hour. The diameter of the Earth, as you know, is 25,000 miles. So 1 second changes where it lands by a whole country. And it has parachutes designed for the Venusian atmosphere. But they fear that the parachutes and the parachute mechanism after 53 years may not work. And so it will hit the ground at 150 miles.
I'm older by 10 years than that thing, than that spacecraft. And most of my mechanisms still work. Not all. Like, some of them are a little faulty, but most of the mechanisms still work.
Well, this is literally from the era when the U.S. and the USSR were battling every day, every week.
For supremacy.
For supremacy. They did end up sending probes to Venus, and we did too. But there you go. Again, by the time the next Fish on Friday meets, Cosmos 482
will have joined us
back on Earth. Maybe the parachutes will work. That would be kind of cool.
That'd be cool.
And then it could.
That music means that you didn't get the call. That's good. So we got through, and we were able to get through the entire episode. And we appreciate it.
Look for the new Pope. And if it's Pietro Parolin, the current Secretary of State of the Vatican,
plotting,
or Louis Tagel. You heard it here first.
Thanks, Charles. Appreciate it. Charles Fishman on Twitter or X at C Fishman. Jeffrey, what is coming up next?
This is coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson and Jason Fitz will join their program today. Tim Murray will join me today on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff will be with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We got to get out of here. We will be back tomorrow, provided we don't get smashed by the damn spacecraft. Failing that, we should be here. But for now, our work is done.